Yeah, so, you know, now we have an overview of how these rules work. I mean, the idea is it was staggering how few partnerships were being audited under the old regime, right? So the IRS and Congress looked at how to simplify it so that they could increase the number of partnerships they could audit. And they simplified it by saying, you know, we're going to deal with one person, the partnership rep, and we're going to audit everything, almost everything at the partnership level, even things that would seem to be more partner appropriate, like disguised sales. And that all makes it a lot easier for the IRS to audit partnerships and collect tax. But what it doesn't do is resolve a lot of things among partners. And so a lot of that stuff about how partners are going to work these things out amongst themselves is really left to your agreement. And so whereas before, under TEFRA, partners had some rights to notice and participation under the code. There's really none of that now. So everything is handled with the partnership rep as far as the IRS is concerned, and then how the partners work out, how they're going to share the tax, what duties are going to be imposed on the partnership rep, all that has got to be in the partnership agreement now. And so, obviously, as practitioners, we got to think about who our client is. Are we representing the person who's going to be the partnership rep? Are we representing partners that are more passive, that aren't going to be involved in the day-to-day and are going to be subject to the partnership rep's decisions? And so we got to think about what kinds of things we want in the agreement depending on who we're going to represent. You know, like I said, the partners basically have no rights. So if we're representing the partnership representative, we're going to go through a number of elections and options that the partnership rep is going to have to minimize the tax or take a different path with the IRS, but it's going to need certain information from the partners to do some of these things. And so that the partnership rep, at a minimum, is going to want some obligation on the partner's part to provide that information. So, you know, some provision saying that the partners will cooperate with the partnership rep, provide the information timely that it needs to file any elections and for any correspondence with the IRS. Obviously, the partnership representative is a big job with lots of decisions and the opportunity to get sideways with some of the partners, right? So the partnership rep oftentimes will want some kind of indemnification language that, you know, any decisions it makes in good faith won't be held responsible. He'll be indemnified by the partnership for those kinds of decisions. You know, they'll also want to be reimbursed for costs. The partnership rep be probably responsible for choosing advisors, engaging lawyers, accountants, and those kinds of things. And it's going to be expending partnership money for those kinds of things. It's going to want to be reimbursed for those. So that's a provision you'll want to include in the agreement if you're representing the partnership rep. And obviously, the partnership rep will want discretion. It doesn't want to be tied up for every little thing. It doesn't want to have to go back to the board or the managers or get consent from the partners for everything. So you see this tension oftentimes with the partnership rep wanting control, wanting discretion, and the other partners wanting the partnership rep to be reined in. And so, you know, if you're representing those other partners, there's certain things that you're going to want to say over. You're going to want consent rights over settlements, whether to litigate, maybe even who to choose as your lawyers and accountants. At a minimum, you're going to want notice of when things happen. You probably want some kind of fiduciary duty imposed on the partnership rep to have some kind of responsibility on his part to take into account all the positions of the partners. And obviously, depending on the tax profile of the particular partner you're representing, say it's a tax-exempt organization, you're going to want the partnership rep to have a duty to minimize the imputed underpayment, to go to the IRS and try to get a modification of the underpayment to take into account your tax-exempt status. But maybe before we talk about how we play this game, let's talk about whether we even want to play this game. Because there is the ability to get out of these rules. It's somewhat limited. The partnership can elect out if it has 100 partners or less, and all of those partners are eligible partners. So how do we count the partners? It's fairly straightforward. You count the number of K-1s. However many K-1s it sends out to partners, that's how many partners it has. But with the caveat that if you have an S-corporation shareholder, you have to count all the shareholders of the S-corporation for purposes of falling under that 100-partner limit. Eligible partners only include individuals, C-corporations, S-corporations, and estates. So if you have a partner that is another partnership, or even a disregarded entity, or a trust, such as a grantor trust, none of those are eligible partners. So that will take you out of the ability to elect out of this regime. If you are able to elect out, then the IRS is left with its only option to audit all of the partners individually, which if you want to make it harder on the IRS, that's generally a good thing, right? Because these rules are intended to make it easier for the IRS.